I'm calling to order the February 14 meeting of the Writers Advisory Council, and we have a quorum. The first order of business is, are there any people signed up for public comment? Are there any members of the public who would like to speak? Okay, then we will move on. The next item is approval of the agenda. I will just say this, because of the impending weather, it is very likely that we may cut off this meeting unless someone has an objection at the end of the presentation and before the orientation, because much of the orientation materials can be emailed. We can collect questions about the materials, and then we can take those issues up either via email or at the next meeting. So we will certainly not be extending beyond 8:30, and we will maybe get out of here earlier because some people have a ways to go before they sleep. Want to ask for approval of the past meeting minutes. What I would like to do is to call on Candace Walsh to make a motion to approve the past meeting minutes for November and January in block, unless someone has an objection. Ben.
The three of us, we all had, sorry. Now I've got to remember about this. We all posed some questions to WMATA after, just both during the meeting and then after the meeting via email, and none of that is reflected in the minutes. And I'm wondering when we will, when we're going to get the answers to those.
Under item six, the budget questions follow up, we're going to get some of that that John has tonight. Under agenda item six, where you see Metro FY215 budget development, the second question.
Can I just can I just chime in now, or
yes?
The questions have been answered. Somebody's just checking their work, so I expect either tomorrow or Friday I'll be able to email. We're shooting for tonight, and I'm sorry that we missed the mark, but you will get those.
Okay, thanks.
Does anyone have objection to handling the minutes that way for the two sections? So, Candace, I'm sorry.
Motion to approve the November 6, 2013 and the January 8, 2014 minutes in block.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. At this point, we will call on Aaron Overman, who is a senior planner with the Office of Bus Planning, Scheduling, and Customer Facilities for WMATA, and he will be making a presentation. Let me just say this so you can be thinking about it as he comes around. This is part of the ground rules that the RAC leadership team is proposing, but we might as well start it now, and then we won't have to repeat it. We're going to go around to go back to the system of people raising their name plates if they want to speak. We're also going to go to a system where everybody gets one question, and we'll go around, and if there's any time left, you can go to a second round, but any questions left over will be emailed to John, and then one member of the RAC leadership team will be responsible for following up with John to make sure that those questions come back. So if that's agreeable, okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much for having me.
Is that better? All right. So it's a pleasure to be able to present to the RAC tonight. Some of you may have heard a little bit about this program a few months ago. We distributed a set of cards that represented part of our outreach campaign that you'll see later on during our outreach efforts. So this is an update to you now, talking about where we ended up with the outreach. So if we can move on to the background slide to give you a little bit of a sense of why I'm here and what we're looking for from you all tonight. Metro received a $1.875 million grant from the FTA. And what was interesting about the grant was it didn't say you have to buy, 75 of X or 100 of Y. It was relatively broad, and it said that you had to make capital improvements based on bus, and they had to live up to these bus livability principles, supporting communities, And there's you can read a little bit more about it if you just Google bus livability grant. But so we didn't have a set of things that we needed to do going into it. We wanted to go out to the community and ask, what did people want to see? And so we built this whole program called the Love Your Bus Stop campaign that was centered around a survey, but it was how do you get people to fill out a survey and without kind of generating excitement about what is the survey and why should you care about filling out a survey? So that's what we did. And Joanna Conklin is with me. She's with a company called Foursquare Integrated Transportation Planning, and she was our lead in doing all the outreach efforts, developing the survey, so she can jump in if I get something wrong or if you have questions that are specific in nature later on. So what are we looking for from the RAC tonight? Number one is, did I get all of this information right? Does this information that I'm getting ready to present to you conform to what you experience out in the region when you ride buses and experience bus stops? And also, do the conclusions make sense? Are they valid? And do the next steps make sense? That's kind of the feedback that I'm looking for from you. I think we got it right, but that's what I wanted to hear from everybody here. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the survey itself. We did need to be in compliance with the software that Metro uses to do our surveys. It's the same software that's used to do the outreach for the budget and the hearings and everything. So it's a standard kind of format that we use. We wanted to keep the survey simple. Easy to understand for all demographic groups and languages, and focus it on improvements, not necessarily complaints, because this whole thing is, what do you want to see that's better? How can we make things better, not what's wrong? So the two ways that you could fill out the survey was, one was online. We had a customized webpage called WMATA.com/loveyourbusstop. There's still some information left up on there, and we'll be putting this presentation and other information on that webpage later. The big part of the survey effort was face-to-face using tablet computers. So we went out to where people were and engaged with them one-on-one in various languages and all different weather conditions to try and get people to fill out a survey using a tablet computer. About 76% of the surveys were filled out in person, so one-on-one with a tablet, and about a quarter of them were on the web. So most of these had, you know, one-on-one engagement. All right, so you can kind of see the specific elements of these that I'm going to get into a little bit deeper, but we organized the methodology for the campaign in a circle because ultimately all of what we did tied together. When we picked locations of where we wanted to have the events, picking busy locations wasn't enough. You could go out to anywhere and see a bunch of people, but what is going to make them engage with you and want to fill out your survey? So we wanted people to know what we were doing, why we were there, give them something fun to do, generate excitement, and also leverage our partnerships with other transit services around the region, since Metro doesn't operate in vacuum. We're always operating alongside our sister transit services. All right, so here are some examples of different media elements that we did. You see a picture up there of the one up in the corner is a bus card that we put on the tops of buses, so as you're sitting in the bus, you see it up with the advertisements, you know, things that have become pretty standard: Twitter, Facebook, social media, websites. But we also did those cards on the buses, and we did printed cards for people to hand out and use at community events, hand out to their neighbors, put them in a library. I don't know exactly where all these cards ended up, but there were thousands of them, and we handed them out at events. I'll talk a little bit more about where some of the cards went in a second. But we also partnered with radio stations, and this was something that added a lot of fun to the campaign. when you work with the radio stations, they don't just show up at your event. They show up at your event with staff and a van and a speaker, and they play music. And they also, before you get to the event, they talk about, you know, hey, Metro's holding this event. They're conducting this campaign. You should check it out. And so it's a way to spread the message and get it out there more to try and engage people more. There's no point in doing this if people aren't engaging with the survey. So to try and make it fun and make it engaging. People ended up stopping versus feeling rushed, I think, because of the excitement that some of the radio stations generated. All right, so I already talked about our regional partners with the other transit services, but those little postcards, English on one side, Spanish on the other side, they ended up being sent out to community-based organizations as well to try and make sure that we were reaching Title VI communities. And sort of above and beyond all the other things that we did, the radio stations, the outreach to the jurisdictions, everything tied in. But reaching out to those groups was sort of a special attempt to make sure that we engaged with Title VI communities around the region. All right, this might be too small to see up on the screen, but these were the, was it 13 pop events that we did. So these were when we went out to these locations. We didn't expect riders to come to us. We went out to where they were. And they covered different times of the day, different days of the week. We used Metrodata to tailor event times to when the most people were going to be at these locations. And we also engaged a couple festivals. So things that went on all day long, the Southwest Arts Festival, Annandale Fall Festival, and it was the Prince George's Hispanic Festival, were our three festival events. So these were places that were transit accessible, but weren't a kind of commuting place. They were places that people were going to check out different activities. But we had a booth. We had ways for kids to engage. It ended up being a kind of a fun way to get people to engage with the survey and engage with the activity that we were trying to have them do. Kids really like the events at the festivals. It was kind of a neat thing. I'll show you a picture in a minute. So demographics and completed surveys, 2,767 completed surveys. I think that this is a pretty excellent job in terms of something that we weren't going out and saying, hey, we're going to raise your fares. What do you think about that? Hey, we're going to change your bus service. What do you think about that? People always want to talk about when you're changing something. This is something that we're it's more open-ended. It's what do you think about, a bench at your shelter? What do you think about lighting at your bus stop? So it's a lot more open-ended, and I think making sure that we got a lot of responses from all these different demographic groups all around the region made sure that we were doing our job, make sure that we were doing our job effectively, and that's what Joanna and her team made sure that we did. The demographic breakdown really tracks along closely with the overall demographic breakdown of bus riders. And so it wasn't overly weighted toward a particular area or demographic group or income level. We really covered the gamut, and I think we definitely satisfied our Title VI requirements in reaching out to all these different communities. All right, so what did we find out? The overall results, when you break them down by jurisdiction, they do show some differences. But when you look across what do people rank first, what do people rank second, you see a lot of common things coming up. Transit information, access to bus stops. As we drill down into the survey a little bit more, it comes out a little bit more what exactly they're looking for. But these are things that throughout the region, no matter where you were coming from, these were the things that you said were most important to you and second most important to you. So as we, this was my picture that I replaced. So The access piece was important to Virginia, Montgomery County. They ranked it a little bit higher than other places did. But transit information across the board, people want to see better transit information. Safety and security were ranked highly in D.C. and Prince George's, and what we called wait area features. It was things that weren't necessarily about information, but do you want to give some examples of wait area features?
Yeah, like, for example, having a concrete pad to wait on versus the grass.
Oops, sorry. Can you hear me? Okay. Like having a concrete pad to wait on instead of the grass. Those sorts of things didn't seem as important to people as information and things like lighting. So.
Okay. So after we talked about the kind of broad areas, we talked about specific amenities. So these are the list of specific things that we asked people to rank on a 1 through 5 scale. How important are these things to you? And we continue to see some strong preferences on these specific elements when you looked across all of the jurisdictions. So we'll move on to the next one. Okay, so these got even more specific than those 5 broad categories. But again, you look across the top one, real-time information, schedule and route information. These people are clamoring for more information. They stand out as what people want to see. There's also lighting that's on here, and I think lighting is definitely related to safety and security, but one thing that is important to note about this survey is it's not just going to be used by Metro. It could be used by everybody in the jurisdictions and the region that have a responsibility for things in the right-of-way and things that are happening at bus stops. So for the jurisdictions to know how important lighting is, it's something that serves more people than just a bus customer. So it might not be something that Metro might get involved in, lighting, but for the jurisdictions, lighting is important for bus customers. The other thing that you see come up a lot here is access features, sidewalks, crosswalks. Those are things that they're less important than information, but they're important for people to see, and that's what they want to have in terms of improvements. So when we're talking about least desirable amenities, we did ask about newspaper boxes, public art, bike racks, other things that you might think were nice to have at stops, and those were ranked lower by folks. D.C. and Prince George's did rank cleanliness higher than other places did, so having trash cans is something that they thought was important. But when you're looking at what are people wanting to see the most, schedule and route information and real-time information. When is the bus arriving? All right, so I want to boil this one down because it's something that applies kind of broadly toward Metro versus this particular campaign. I think we are following this new trend of we don't just hold a meeting and expect people to come. I think that would have been a waste of everyone's time. We went out to the community, and we made it fun, and we made it noticeable. Don't expect the riders to come to you. Go to where they are. We gave something away. When people filled out the survey, one of the questions was, give us your email or your phone number and a first name. We weren't looking to, you know, contact anybody other than if they won a $50 SmartTrip card, and we're going to give away 5 SmartTrip cards and a sort of a raffle. So that was something that helped people that were just walking by. Hey, I don't want to be bothered. Oh, would you like a chance to win a $50 SmartTrip card? Sure, I would. I'll spend a couple minutes with you to help you with your survey. So staffing. Who you pick to staff your events is really important. We had an awesome group of people working on these events, and they spoke different languages. They were of different ages, different ethnic backgrounds. People were really excited to engage with people because they knew that they spoke Spanish, and they knew that they could kind of help them through these through the survey and help them fill it out. So it wasn't people standing in a corner antisocial. These were a lot of social folks that really wanted to get out there and engage. And also going outside your own box and trusting others to carry your message further with partnerships, having the radio stations help us, having the jurisdictions help us, having the community-based organizations help us, it all worked together to make sure that people heard about the campaign, knew that it was important, and knew how they could help. All right, so what's happening next? We're going to have a final report that everybody here will be welcome to read that's going to get, you know, really in the weeds of exactly what did we do and what did we find. And combining it with data on ridership, boardings, existing amenities, information that we already essentially have around Metro, and we're going to work on a combination of projects, doing exactly what people told us that they wanted to see. Customer information. The static customer information is schedule and information cases. You'll see the blue, the new ones have blue plastic that go around them, and it'll say schedule on the top, has a route schematic, has information on when the bus is arriving and where the bus is going. So that's something that's not real time, but it's information and it's helpful. Real time information is something that's coming really, really soon as part of the region's Tiger grant. We're going to be installing about 248 real-time signs in shelters that will tell you when the next bus is coming. And so as part of this grant, what I'm proposing is to do a lot more of those signs and put them in places that the Tiger grant isn't covering, places that transit centers that Tiger isn't covering, places that have a lot of high ridership, transfer locations, places like that. And so that'll be the large thrust of the grant. And then we also heard about access and the need for access improvements. So we'll have some projects that are more physical, concrete type improvements, curb ramps, sidewalks, a way for you to get from your ramp coming off and on the bus to the sidewalk. So physical, concrete projects, construction projects. So a combination of those is what we plan to move ahead with. And I'd love to hear from you all what you think about that proposal and if you have any questions about the projects.
Thank you. What I'd like to do is to start with Lorraine. If you have any questions, please put your nameplate up. And if people don't mind, can we extend the period of time for this to at least 7:05? We'll look at it after that. Is it agreeable? Okay. Lorraine.
Okay, I'll just make it brief. When you actually build when you come up with the design for the bus stops, please look at the Arlington bus stop, the $1 million bus stop, so that you learn what not to do. Okay? Because even though we have the real-time information, guess what? It's an monitors that are so low that somebody stands in front of it and you have no idea where it is. So it doesn't cover you, no shelter whatsoever. So just look at it so that you figure out, do not use that cover, do not use this. That was just my comment. And especially when you figure out the real time, put it in a place that you can actually see it.
You mentioned that real-time signs, which were one of the number one asks that people have, are coming soon. Can I pin you down on where and when? Is there a map of where these things are going to go? I know that Metro people get really squirrely when I ask for dates and times and budgets and things like that, but that's something that's a really good news story, and I hope that Metro will create a little anticipation by, you know, putting out some information about where those are going to go. And I also just like to piggyback on that same thing by wondering, are the existing screens that are there for some shelters going to be used for real transit information so that the Tiger grant doesn't have to be used for those particular bus stops, so it can be spread a little wider, or will this be in addition to the screens that already exist?
Okay. On your first question, I'll work with John on exactly what information we can share. One thing about the Tiger grant that makes it really unique is FTA is holding all of the applicants really, really closely to what they've actually applied for and what they won the grant for. So if you look at what the information that's available and what was the application, FTA is basically saying to Metro, those locations, you pretty much have to build them at those locations. So it's something I'll work with John, but it shouldn't be hard to figure out, and we'll see what happens with the schedule pieces. But the grant is approaching the end of its life and needs to be spent soon, so it's getting close. And in terms of replacing things, like I was up at Friendship Heights the other day, and there are signs drilled into the wall there that are turned off and they're not working. And I don't know originally where those came from. If they're part of something that we're certainly not going to rip out things that are working and there today. But if it's something that isn't working today, maybe
No, I'm talking about something different. I'm talking about bus stops that have ads, the ones that, you know, that private companies have actually paid for those ads to go in, and they've built all the infrastructure, the electricity, the internet infrastructure. Will Metro use that existing infrastructure to give us real-time information? Because it's already there. All you have to do is reprogram the sign.
If we can go back a couple slides, I don't know how, yeah, it was one more back. It's, oh, I'm sorry. This one right here. So the top one shows a sample NextBus sign. Ours are larger and they have taller characters, but they're not that much more complicated than this. It's a two-line or three-line screen and LED, and it will be like installed in a box that's sealed from the weather, and they're sort of plug and play. They attach with a bracket to the bus shelters. So what's happening now is we're designing how these things get bracketed and installed. Having electricity in the shelter is a requirement. We can't run them without electricity. So every shelter that has electricity has the potential of getting a sign.
But isn't that, sorry to take up time here, but isn't that duplicating effort in that you already have the infrastructure? All you would need to do is just take up a couple pixels on that ad, and you wouldn't have to have that. You're spending too much money.
Maybe we can answer that. But what I can say is those aren't our ads, and those aren't our bus shelters. Those are DC. We don't own any of our, but all those nice bus shelters you see in the district are actually property of the DC Department of Transportation. So I think it may be a more complicated answer than that, but we'll try and figure that out.
But I think it's worth your following up. So can we take that as a follow-up question to pin that down?
A comment about results by jurisdiction. I'm from Montgomery County, and I know Wheaton. And it strikes me, since Montgomery County was totally different than everybody else, it led me to believe that the results may make sense because it's based on what already exists. And if you have sidewalks and if you have a paved location, that's not as high up on your list. And around Wheaton, going up Veers Mill, you have ditches and, you know, 6-8 foot or 8-lane Veers Mill road to cross. And you're lucky to do it and live to get to the other side. So that strikes me as a fairly realistic response then.
That's okay. Thanks. I appreciate your enthusiasm in the presentation. And thanks for also just presenting it as what you need from us. I appreciate that language. Just two quick things. Not all of the things that you have listed have the same cost to them. So I just have a general question of how you can productively use what people are asking for in an environment in which they seem to be asking for things that are the most expensive in terms of trying to design what you're going to get the most effectiveness for your dollars spent in terms of consumer utility. That's one. The other question I have is, probably not in this effort, but maybe in future efforts, would it be possible to get specific information from people, even stop-based, like people could identify for you a stop where they need a crosswalk or a stop where they need a bench. Is that something that may be possible in the future? They could do the work for you in terms of identifying what needs there are.
Sure, sure. I think on your, let me answer your last question first. We did ask, one of the questions in the survey was, I forget exactly how it was worded, but it was more freeform and allowed people to respond on something that wasn't a 1 through 5 ranking.
Right. We had, can we do both the answers? Okay. We had an open-end question at the end of the survey that was, you know, tell us anything else you want to tell us about bus stops. And, of course, people told us about other things as well because that's what happens. And we did ask whether they had a shelter at the bus stop that they most frequently use, just to have a sense whether people who generally have shelters perceive things differently than people who didn't. But we didn't ask. We played with whether to ask for specific locations, and it was in trying to get a 5-minute survey and trying to really nail down how do you ask people, like do you ask them for a cross street or an address, it gets very complicated for people to be able to answer that question. Not that it's out of the question to be able to do it, it just in this case it was complicated. Does that help?
Okay. And we do collect data all the time from like our Metro Access eligibility office gives us when Metro Access customers say, I use this bus stop and it's not accessible, we collect that information and it ends up getting on a priority list for a stop that is probably more important to fix than another one if an actual customer could use that stop and wants to use that stop and they can't. And we have a lot of information from surveys and other data, so we don't rely just on customers to give us that information. We certainly take it, but there are other efforts underway that to help get at what is needed out there.
Before I call on the next RAC member, are there any public comments on this topic? I don't want to skip that. Okay. If people don't have any objection, I'm going to go to 7:10, but I'm going to cut it off. And please, one question, not
I'll be quick. I just have a quick question about the outreach pop-up events. It seems as though a lot of those events were sort of on the outskirts of the city and nothing really focused on, like, for example, like major routes in D.C., like 14th Street, 16th Street, Georgia Avenue, like things like that. Like, for example, I didn't see any pop-ups, and looking at this now, I wouldn't have seen any based on the routes that I take. So are those people, are they being taken into consideration? Because, for example, we, you know, those avenues are, those routes have grown immensely in the past few years, and we need things like bus shelters. We need those types of things. And I feel like maybe based on the pop-up events and things like that, maybe we weren't even, like, in this survey.
Sure. The pop-up events were a lot of thought went into, and not just thought, but data went into where did we pick where these pop-up events should be. So we looked at information like where do people of different ethnic and racial minority groups live, and we also looked at where does that intersect with places where people are riding the bus and places that kind of serve as hubs for the bus. Do you want to say a little bit more about our methodology?
Right, and so we did an analysis where we looked at both demographic data from the census to see where these target populations lived, and we also looked at all of the lines in the system and identified the lines that had the highest Title VI, you know, minority low-income populations, and we picked 12 locations. Now, having said that, you know, we had 12 pop-up locations in a very large metro area, so we could only have, you know, so many in each jurisdiction. But what we did with the bus cards is, you know, folks had bus cards went up all over the system. So even if you didn't catch us at a pop-up event, you had, you know, hopefully you would have seen one of the cards in the buses and had the opportunity to go online and fill out a survey that way. So we were trying to capture people that way as well.
Yeah, the social media helped with that too. We have a really active social media team. So if you were on Twitter and said something about, hey, my bus stop needs help or needs some improvement, the Twitter group was engaging with those customers directly and saying, hey, there's a pop-up event, or hey, there's an opportunity for you to actually fill out this survey. So it wasn't reaching huge numbers of people. You know, Twitter is kind of a one-on-one thing and done in public, but we did kind of focus these geographic events on more of the Title VI communities, and then did other things that were more available to the broad reach of people. And I think the bus cards are probably where most like the Georgia Avenue, the 16th Street riders would have seen those in the buses and been able to engage.
If you think about including the information related to page 15 staffing, have you got any deaf people coming taking the survey? Were there any? Did you meet any deaf and hard of hearing surveyor? Were there any sign language interpreter available at that time?
During the pop-up events, we did not engage with any of the deaf or hard of hearing community. All of the online surveys were translated in, oh gosh, I think we did seven languages, and they were it also was fully accessible in terms of reading the survey back to you, and engaging with whatever software was needed to engage to listen to the survey if you were hard of hearing, or see the survey if you couldn't see. So it followed all of the necessary requirements for accessibility on the online survey.
Frank.
Thank you for your presentation. I just have a quick question, sort of suggestion. You mentioned that you were going to be sharing the results of the survey with the jurisdictions for their use for things. I'm wondering, are you also going to be sharing it with other divisions in WMATA? Because it seems that some of the concerns, like cleanliness in the district and Prince George's County, indicate a problem in those areas, or safety and security and lighting would indicate that for some jurisdictions or for some sections of Metro, these are problems rather than just potentials for improvement.
Sure, I think it's certainly something that anybody who could benefit from the information should have the information. What makes bus stops particularly challenging is so many of them, the vast majority of them, are not on Metro property. They're in the property of Arlington County or VDOT or DDOT or whoever owns the right-of-way. So we have to work with them to do essentially anything that's not on our property. So that's a good point, and it's something that we need to make sure that they have as good of information as we do.
Tom. Thomas, you had your.
It's just, I guess, in addition, the hearings on the budget for those that commented on bus service and the likely raise in fares that were coming, generally just talked about the lack of reliable information, not just real time, but just generally correct information about bus routes at bus shelters and anywhere along at stops in between. Have you shared any of the survey information, or do you plan to work with the Metro staff who are responsible for ensuring that that information is kept up and correct? Is there a plan to just generally visit, you know, entire routes to make sure that the information is correct, since that seems to be the biggest concern from your survey as well?
Sure, that's a really timely point. One of the efforts that's underway is all of the priority corridor networks. So that's a board approved set of routes that carry, I think it's two-thirds or 60% of all of the bus riders in the region are riding on these priority corridor networks, and the board has approved those, you know, years ago. And to have quality information at every single one of those stops is a project that we're working on now, to make sure that on those corridors that are the most important ones have good quality information, static. And also the Tiger projects are focusing on improvements to those corridors as well. I think what this project is going to allow is for us to go beyond those corridors and get to places that aren't covered by other efforts and other kind of, you know, like there's certain routes that carry just as many routes, just as many people per day as priority corridor network routes in terms of number of people, and making sure that those routes have the, you know, high quality information as well as the priority corridor network routes, I think is something that we could use this grant to do.
Thank you very much. And if anybody has, oh, I keep wanting to cut you off. Okay, sorry.
I'm sorry, I'm speaking here.
so am I. Because
I'm amazed that your 76% of your surveys were the ones that you did at the pop-ups. I think that's incredible. Where did you find the people to do those? I mean, the staffers. What was your source?
Sure. This whole project was supported with Joanna Conklin's group and the Laura Biala. She's the president of the Foursquare Integrated Transportation Planning. So it was some of that staff, and then you guys hired a whole bunch of kind of outreach and people who specialized in one-on-one outreach.
Right. So there were a number of us. Then when the radio stations come, they bring, like we had El Sol, they would bring 4 to 6, you know, Spanish speaking. And then we partnered with an event staffing firm. And these are folks, this is what they do for a living. They go out and they engage with people. And most of them were bilingual. They are just, their job is to engage people. So they did a great job in getting people to talk to us.
Okay. Final question. I apologize. I don't know. Okay, thank you very, very much. And if people have additional questions, I have a question, but please send them to John and just keep this for further thought. I see a possible RAC position developing as a result of this presentation and some of the questions raised, so we can think about that. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to the next topic, which is the public hearings recap. There is a part in the agenda that's already written, so if people have, and I know you've had little chance to look at it, but if people want to bring up some highlights of their attendance at the public hearings recap, and thank you all people who attended. I mean, I think we had a tremendous turnout. I think people were recognized in most of the hearings as RAC members, and that was a great start to our year. So I will take any comments from anybody who might have had something they want to bring a highlight. And again, let me go first this time to the to public comment. Does any member of the public? I think there's only one. Do you have a comment on the public hearings? Okay, thank you, Ben.
Yeah, Daniel and I were having a little discussion before the meeting about this, and I think there's a role for the RAC to play in terms of foreshadowing the next round of hearings, whenever that may be, to look at the format of the hearings. Because I think one thing that was common through all the hearings that I've been to, and these were no exception, was there's no interaction involved in these. It's the board members sit at the podium and they bear the burden of the public's sorrow. And there's hardly ever any sort of comment that goes back. There's never any follow-up that goes back. It's just a one-way, it's not even an interaction, I would call it, because an interaction requires two forms of communication. So I think there's some role for the RAC to play in maybe suggesting to the board a way that they could interact with the public that would be more useful for the public and, quite frankly, more useful for the board as well.
Oh, dear. Is that the correct way?
Aldea. I was a part of that conversation with Daniel and Ben, and I would like to second that just because in going to the hearing, I was anticipating hearing a lot of protests against fare increases, but almost as often as someone complained about fare increases, there were complaints about communication, and when Ben brought that point up, I thought that it was a little bit ironic that it was one way, and that even by going to the hearing and saying that you're having trouble receiving information from the transit authority, you still can't get your answers. So that's all I want to say.
Barbara.
Why, thank you. I just want to echo something you said.
I went to two hearings, Arlington. I know we had six people here from there, from Virginia, and some from D.C., and I don't even know how many came to D.C. I want to thank Aldea for stepping forward and doing recap of what all of us had come up with, because, you know, being a newbie, it's sometimes hard to get going, and I appreciate that she did that, and the wonderful attendance, so that we could all hear it, because this is only every two years, mm-hmm. and it's a great opportunity. Thanks.
Daniel, while you were out, we started discussing the public hearing, so if there was something you had to say, both Ben and Aldea talked about the conversation you all had about the lack of two-way communications. Is there something you want to add?
No, sorry I had to leave. I just had a little upset stomach. Thank you for filling me in. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay.
I don't have my name.
Yeah, I know.
I don't have my name.
No, I know. I'm going to take the comments, and then I was going to call on you because I know you had some information about the legal standing of the hearings and the docket. Is there anybody over here that...
I would like to say, I didn't realize it was only one-way confrontation during the hearing. I agree with Ben. I thought it would be good if we have a RAC member sitting on the panel during the hearing, public hearing one day.
Did you say that?
I didn't, but that's the idea.
Oh, okay. Tom.
I think one of the most surprising things in the last week or so since I attended the hearing was that I didn't actually see anything about the hearing the next day. I think I saw a small write-up in the Express on the train maybe the next morning between stories about Justin Bieber and I think X Factor, American Idol. What's surprising to me is that social media around the metro is colorful and can often be quite hostile. But I think they tend to be quite receptive as well when good things are coming out of meetings like this. And it seemed like there was a decent lack of engagement with certainly Twitter and other social media outlets to try and attract attention to what the board is trying to do, which is to make information public and hopefully improve based on the hearings. It just didn't seem like there was any outreach afterward.
Karen.
Thank you. Frank and I attended the first public hearing in Greenbelt, and I thought it was great, but I wanted to highlight that we did have a Metro station manager that provided comments, and I thought his comments were very interesting because it goes back to a lot of what we say here on the RAC. And what he said was that Metro should request full background checks on all station managers and drivers, so I thought that was really interesting to hear it from the inside of WMATA. He also said that WMATA should also look at addressing issues on employee harassment and bullying. So this is also indicative that there's also issues internally within Metro as well. And my summary of the hearing is not here, but that particular hearing was very heavy on Metro access. We also had Patrick Sheehan that provided comments as well. So it wasn't just about the affordability, but it was also the scheduling. We had lots of speakers that just had horrible stories to talk about as it relates to scheduling as well. So if anyone wants to see a summary of my budget hearings, just send me an email and I will share those.
You know what happened? Because she was the first person to make a report. That's what you get for being early. Because your report should have been sent and sent, so that will definitely happen. I have a couple of comments. Number one, I've attended four hearings out of the six, and so I have a report. I think that the RAC should take a position on all of those comments that were not directly budget related to make certain that they're followed up on, or at least to find out from WMATA what do they do with those myriad comments that are not directly related to the budget. I also want to call on Loida, who is the board secretary, who can probably give us some insight into the legal basis for the hearings and why it may be a one-way communication. And I'm sorry, before she does that, let me talk. Mary Ann, did you have a comment?
Yeah, it's not about what Loida would be talking about, I don't think. What I noticed in going to one in Rockville and then reading some of the others, the AAC was well represented and had the same set of talking points. Also, there are a number of people, I don't know how many, that went to multiple public hearings. And I think my third point is the AAC did participate identifying themselves as AAC members, but speaking at the hearing as a member of the public. And so they were able to put in things that they as individuals thought. And just in terms of our own questions about communications, I found that interesting.
Okay, so the only thing I want to share with you that Ben is absolutely right. By nature, the public hearings are exactly that, just a hearing session. We do try to have, every time we have a public hearing, we have a session, an information session or an open house, where we have subject matter experts who are supposed to be answering the questions before the hearing. So there's a 30-minute period from 6 to 6:30 where the members of the public can certainly do that with the subject matter experts. We always build that in. However, if the RAC feels that that should be a different format, I think that there is an opportunity there to make whatever changes you think would be most helpful. But we do have that period of time, and then the public hearing itself. It is, I think it would be difficult to have an interaction conversation with as many people as we get testifying, because the dialogue would not only go for a long time, but then we wouldn't be able to capture the entire testimony just for the record purposes, for legal issues. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Clearly, Metro needs to fulfill its legal obligations, but at the same time, Metro can't just think of it as a check-the-box exercise.
Absolutely.
And that's what it appears as today. Right. It's not about the content. It's about the way that it's presented. I think that's what makes people – first of all, I think it's what makes people not go to the hearings, is that they feel like it's a one-way thing and that they're not going to be – maybe they'll be heard, but they may not be listened to. And I think there's a big difference there. So anyway, I think that there's a role for the RAC to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Making some suggestions. And I think there's actually a lot more flexibility in terms of what Metro can do on that than we might think at first blush.
Well, I have a question, because at the bus hearings, it was real obvious to me this year, or when we had them a few months ago, that there was an open house. You know, and there were, you know, little stands of information. Was that at these hearings? I didn't see it, but it might have been there. I didn't see there was a clear place where you could go to talk to people. Was
yeah.
it?
The one in Arlington that you went to was in the back, because the library
okay.
was a little tricky. The space itself was a little tricky, so we couldn't have it separated, say,
uh-huh.
outside. But we did have it in the back, and we had the people there to answer
Was there
questions.
One here, too?
Yes.
Was it the same thing? I just
yeah.
didn't notice
it. It was out
okay.
here, actually. The one
yeah.
here, we had enough space to do it outside.
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
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 It was right outside this room.
One other comment. Because I've talked to some of the other people about this, is that the people who do the presenting, the presenter and then the board member that does the introduction, I think it's safe to say there's a wide variation in the way it's delivered. And with Mary Hines, did I say that right? It's very clear that she wants the information. That's why we're here. We're collecting. I mean, and the presentation. From some people, it's you know, really conveying, this is what we're thinking about, we want to hear from you. And others, it's more reading the paper. And so it could vary. I had one of each, I would say. And that may be some of what's contributing to the sense that it's one way.
Going to bullets number 2 and 3 here, to help us, we'll move on with the agenda a little bit. I want to make a motion. I want to move that the RAC task the budget committee, which will soon be formed, with creating a sense of the RAC resolution on the docket that was considered at the budget hearings, to create a consolidated position that we can then make public and send to the board.
Second.
So yeah, to say that again, the motion is to task the Budget Committee with coming up with a sense of the RAC resolution on the docket, in other words, the fare increases, that the RAC can consider at its next meeting and vote on. Okay.
And these are just opinions and recommendations that we'll have for the board? Is that what you mean by, like, sense of the RAC or?
Yeah, I mean, a policy statement.
Okay.
You know, do we think the fare should go up? Do we think they should go down? What, you know, if we were the board, what would we do? That kind of thing.
I think that would be very helpful. I also think it would be helpful if there's some sense of priority within the document, not just a laundry list of things. We can pick a few things to bold, put bold type.
Right. Well, what I'd like to suggest just procedurally is that we move on to, well, do people want to vote on this, or do people want to form the committee and then let the committee be charged with coming up with the document, the type of document, i.e., what did you call it?
Policy.
A policy or a letter, which we've done in the past, or a resolution, whatever. What do people want to do? We've already got them. Well, we have to deal with the motion. We've got a motion. It's been approved and seconded. I mean, it's been moved and seconded. What do we want to do with that? Okay. Does anybody have discussion?
Right. I just want to add that the document that Carol sent out requesting nominations for the Budget Committee specifically said that the Budget Committee will provide leadership in the development of a formal position on the key items in the 2015 WMATA budget. So I think that goes back to what you're saying, Ben, and I wanted to know if that was succinct enough. Does that get to?
Sure.
Okay.
I was providing more of a timeline and making it a little more specific and pointed that, you know, that we need to do this by the next meeting because then the board's going to vote on it. So if we're going to have our say, we've got to do it soon.
Right. I was going to do this elaborate lead-in, but just to let people know, the plan is, well, those of us who attended know that the budget timeline is the board said that they were going to vote on it in the spring. Practically speaking, they have it scheduled for their March 27th.
Board meeting,
which means that the Budget Committee, that's one of the reasons why we did some of this work by email, because the Budget Committee has to form, get its act together, get its data together, and come in with a formal presentation, as you said, by March 1st in order for us to get this done. So is there any more discussion on the motion? Okay, I call the question. All in favor? Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay, so moved. I'd like to now turn it over to Karen Lynch, who is the Vice President for Maryland, who's going to lead the discussion on the Budget Committee formation.
Okay, great. The nominations and statements of interest submitted to the nominating committee represent each jurisdiction, and each nominee has either a financial background, budgeting background, or analytical background that we believe will support the work of the RAC. The nominating committee submits the following nominations for approval: Dexter Williams, District of Columbia; Fred Walker, Fairfax, Virginia; Althea Mary Miller, apologize if I mispronounced it, Arlington County, Virginia; Catherine Cordham, Montgomery County, Maryland; and Karen Lynch, Prince George's County, Maryland. Are there any nominations from the floor? Okay. At this time, I would like to ask each nominee to provide a brief statement to the RAC in support of their nominations. So we'll start with Dexter.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate the opportunity. My name is Dexter Williams. I represent the District of Columbia, and a few days ago, I sent my statement of interest to John. Carol and I, John went back and forth about if it should be a statement or not, but I followed Carol's recommendation and submitted a statement. Basically, like I said in my statement, if you want to know what an organization is doing, then you have to look at its budget. And I think that all the issues that Metro riders face is in some way tied to the Metro budget and finances. And so I think it's very critical that we have a budget committee, and I think it's vital to advocating for Metro riders. In terms of my experience right now, I'm an MPA student at the University of Baltimore, which is a graduate public administration program that focuses on budgeting and analytical techniques, and I think I can apply that to the budget committee. Also, when I was in college, I served on numerous boards and commissions that dealt with budgets that allocated hundreds of thousands of dollars to students, and so I do have some background in budgeting, and I hope to serve on the budget committee. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Fred?
So I'm a good walker, and I'm interested in being on the budget committee, and I'll just give you a couple pieces of my background. So currently, my current job, I manage about $500 million worth of expenses. I've worked in other places. I was on a municipal board of finance. I understand municipal and public financing. We oversaw $100 million of people's tax money. And one of my proud events was to serve on that for 6 years and never raise taxes. So that was pretty good. And I've worked on building committees. I've built like $30 million schools. And I've been on many boards. So I think I have a really strong background in understanding first how to spend people's money. I understand public financing, and anybody that knows me, I'm really tight with the money.
Okay, Aldia. Aldea, okay.
Okay, well, I can kind of go through the tasks that I think that the budget committee is kind of fulfilling. I know that they want kind of some insight into the budget from a rider's perspective. I think that that's kind of what we're all here and for. And if I can further that work and give more perspective, that's terrific. So that's kind of my motivation. I know that another one of the tasks will be to advise on whether the RAC should approve or concur with the AAC's position statement, and I attended the Arlington hearing last week and heard many of the members of the AAC explain their position, so I think that I would be well qualified to do that. I do some budgeting, not on Fred's level, in my current work, where I have to budget for advertising campaigns, and I think that should be about it.
Thank you. Catherine Cordham is on travel, so she was unable to participate in today's meeting, but she did send a statement to me, and I'll read it to you all. Ms. Cordham is a new member of the RAC, appointed in January 2014. She has a doctorate degree in engineering and is currently the chair of a nonprofit organization. In this capacity, she oversees the budget and finances of the organization. If her nomination is approved, Ms. Cordham looks forward to working with the budget committee and having the opportunity to get an up-close view of WMATA's revenues and expenses in support of developing the RAC's position on the budget. And I'll also speak for myself. I've served on the RAC for a little over a year, representing Prince George's County. In 2013, I served as chair of the Operations and Communications Committee, and as you know, I'm currently the 2014 vice chair of the RAC. I have experience in strategic planning and program evaluations. I also have a strong research and analytical background, and also have expertise in forecasting and managing budgets at a very small scale, certainly not like Fred. I have maintained a long-standing professional career and commitment to transportation safety and believe that I can be an asset to the budget committee. At this time, I move that we close the nominations.
Is there a discussion for that? I wanted to ask if, could I clarify that you've got two Virginians, two mm-hmm. Maryland, and one D.C.?
Yes.
And I wanted to know if I could nominate someone, assuming they're willing to accept, as I think that the people are all great, mm-hmm. but I think another asset to this committee, should he be willing to do it, is Van Ball.
I would love to see him, if he's willing.
They don't let me near the money at my work, not even close. But I have had experience in doing the customer pledge last year, other sort of policy documents, and that's kind of what we're going to be talking about, is not only where does the money go, but how does Metro spin where the money goes. So in that sense, I probably would be an asset. So yes, I'll accept your nomination.
Okay, well, at this time, I move that we close the nomination.
I second the motion.
Okay. Are you going to take the next second and suggest that this become the budget committee?
Okay, I motion that the members that we just nominated are appointed to the budget committee.
Any objections? All in favor? All opposed? Okay, in keeping with the bylaws, the chair has the right to appoint a convener of this meeting, and then the committee will then decide who will be the chair. And I've asked Fred Walker to serve as the convener of this budget committee. So will you accept? Thank you. The budget committee is now free to deal with what it needs to do because it's on a very, very fast track. I would say that there are two things that I would just, as chair, want to see. Again, one common theme to me on all the hearings, the four of the six hearings, and then reading about the other two, was the position of the Accessibility Advisory Committee with regard to the fair calculator multiplier and with regard to the cap on Metro access fares. So I would definitely like to ask that the budget committee take up that matter as part of their deliberations. Is there anything else you want us to do to get you started? Okay, good idea. Okay, great. Thank you very much for all of you, and thank you very much for this. I told Karen today in an email, she and I must have graduated from the same school of complete staff work, so I really appreciate your work on this. Let's see, moving on. Oh, appointment of members to the Staff Coordinator Hiring Committee. I guess the privileges of being a chair is a chance to get to know and work with Loida more closely. And she contacted me regarding the replacement of, because we can't really replace him, but replacement of John Pasek as the staff coordinator. I don't know if you realize it or not, but in December, I think it was, John was promoted to the position of assistant board secretary. Leaving a vacancy for the RAC staff coordinator. He is now doing both jobs. And so there's an interest in, of course, hiring someone to backfill his position of RAC staff coordinator. And again, if you will look at the bylaws call for a hiring committee, which is comprised, among other things, of the board secretary, who's the supervisor of this position, a technical advisor from the Human Resources Office, and up to three members of the Riders Advisory Council who can be appointed by the chair but should be whose appointments must be concurred upon by the full RAC. And these up to three people must be represent each of the major jurisdictions. Based on the work that needs to be done, the first step, John is the only incumbent of this position. So the first, and it has been established in 2005, so the first thing to do would be to look at the position description to develop, have some input into development of critical factors. The HR person expects somewhere between 700 to 800 applications for this one position based on, you know, historical results. And the hiring committee would then, the HR committee would then winnow down the 700 to 800 applications to about seven or eight candidates who would then be interviewed by members of the hiring committee who would, of course, have input to some of the questions that are developed. Probably this is going to take place during the day. Here's what I'd like to do if people have no objection. I would like to make the three members of the hiring committee three of the four people on the RAC leadership team. So it would be Karen Lynch for Prince George, for Maryland, Barbara Hermanson for Virginia, and myself for the district, and I think that's okay with Candace. But if someone has an objection and just has a burning sensation. Okay. So can somebody make a motion to that effect? Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, all in favor? All opposed? Any abstention? That is sort of funny. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the elimination of the August meeting. The RAC leadership team had a meeting with John, and we talked about a lot of items. And one of the items we talked about was possibly mirroring the actions of the board and not having an August meeting. We are not in full agreement on this, so I wanted to just sort of throw it out for a bit of discussion, see how people sort of take a straw vote about how that strikes people. The obvious pro is that it gives us a breather and doesn't mean that we can't reinstate it if we feel like our workload needs it. But since the board doesn't meet during August, we figured that would be as good a time as any to take a breather. So that's sort of the pro position. And I don't know if there are other people who want to speak. Yes, Ben.
Having been on the leadership team last year, I can say that there's actually more RAC business that needs to be done than there are meetings.
That's true.
So while I definitely think that there is some case to be made for a break in our schedule, I think we owe it to the people we represent, but also I think we owe it to ourselves just to have the time to be able to deal with all the things we need to deal with. So I would say that we probably should keep the August meeting. Never thought I would say that, but that's probably what I think.
Okay. Let me have a straw vote on this. How many people want to eliminate the August meeting? Eliminate the August meeting. How many people want it to stay on the calendar? Not even going to take a motion if nobody minds. Just okay.
I think last year the August meeting had some of the lowest participation, so I think people should keep that in mind. A lot of people take their vacations at that time. A lot of people right now are saying, yes, I'm going to be here, but then come August, it's going to be like six people in this room, and we kept it on the calendar, and we might not be able to get done what we need to get done. So just something to keep in mind.
At the same time, though, crazy stuff happened to happen in August, and there was a lot to talk about. Even though there weren't very many people there, but the issues were important.
Not to mention the new Ferris go in, the maybe Silver Line is going in. What? So all the blue line, starvation, whatever.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, for right now, we're going to keep the August meeting. It doesn't mean that we can't revisit this. So why don't we revisit this maybe in June, or say June or July, depending on what our workload looks like. We'll revisit it closer to August because Candace does have a good problem. But then again, we had a serious attendance problem last year for a good portion of the year. Marianne.
The other thing that we did when there was the attendance problem, we had some projects that we were working on, and we made one of the meeting times a work session, and we got a lot done. Yeah. Even though it was not a formal meeting, but it allowed work to get done that we hadn't had time for.
Okay. I'm going to take the liberty of skipping around unless somebody, has a problem. Let's dispose of the incident communications. Because of the impending snowstorm, the board committees are canceled for tomorrow. They've already announced that and put it on the web. So that gives us time to draw a breath and to look back and see what it is we really want to do. I sort of sent out a quick note. I made a big error. This incident communication panel took place in October 2012. There's not been enough time to really do any significant staff work on this. So we'll try to, if this, if there's someone who is particularly has a burning desire, I know Ben had sent me some comments, but if there's someone who has a burning desire to work on this right now, they can. If not, maybe we should defer that conversation until we talk about establishment of committees, because it sort of falls within the safety and security arena.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, sorry, I'll speak on the mic.
They're going to all meet next week.
Right.
So if you all have any comments about what is on their agenda, your opportunity to provide those to the committee is next week. My concern is that if you wait until you establish a committee and go through all of that process, mm-hmm. that the Board Safety and Security Committee will be in the rearview mirror. Okay. So,
I just don't
want you all to miss an opportunity.
I understand that. So what we'll do is this, is that I was going to basically make something a little bit higher level than cocktail conversation comments, because I felt like the full RAC hadn't had a chance to really weigh in, knew nothing about the background. Now that we've got this reprieve, I'll try to get more documents together and ask for people to respond and comment by email so that we can have something to say. But I wasn't going to appear on Thursday and say anything on behalf of the RAC except, you know, good morning, we're pleased that you're following up and you should have invited us to the table sooner, you know, in a nicer package. Okay, so we have a little bit of time, so we're not going to discuss that tonight because we don't have enough information to have an intelligent conversation. Yes, yes. Yes, I did. I'm sorry. Yes, you did make comments. Let's see. What can we do quickly? Let me talk about a few of the ground rules. I'm not going to go through all of this because this is another thing that can be done by email. But basically, what the RAC leadership team did is we did meet with John, and we kind of set up some ground rules, some of which we've already talked about. The other thing that we decided was that the RAC leadership team will be an open meeting. So we're probably going to meet once a month, right closer to the end of this meeting. So we were aiming for next Monday, which, of course, is a holiday, and we haven't quite settled on it. But the time will be announced, the place will be announced, and what we'll be doing is sending out an email that will ask for agenda items so that we'll be, you know, having the full ideas of the RAC to work with. The second thing you should know is that I think most of you know that the RAC leadership team has been having a quarterly meeting with the WMATA board's executive committee. The new general counsel has decided that as far as the WMATA board is concerned, this is an open meeting. So it is not going to take place upstairs in whatever room or office we met in last year. This has only been going on for barely 2 years. It will be an open meeting, and people will be notified of that meeting. It's an open meeting, and members of the RAC are invited to attend. Yes. I think what has to happen now is, because it's getting close to, you know, the time that we really need to think about leaving, we certainly don't want to stay beyond 8:30. I'd like to move to talk about the establishment of work groups or committees, subcommittees, which somehow I don't see here. Is that not on there?
I think it got shifted. I think my intent was to shift it to, I need to learn to speak in the mic. I think my intent was to shift it into, as we discussed, into the orientation after we sort of talked about that. And I think I cut and neglected to paste.
Here's what I think would be the best use of our time, and feel free to stop me, okay, if you don't agree. I think the best use of our time would be to talk about the establishment of work groups or committees and how we're going to develop our work plan, whether we're going to establish committees and let the committees sort of come up with items that they need, you know, want to work on for the year, or whether that'll be on the committee of the whole. That's what I'd like to spend the time for the rest of the meeting, because everything else on this agenda can be communicated by email, as far as I'm concerned. How do people feel about that? And I know I'm kind of pushing, but I'd really like to get that done. I'd also like to say this, I've had occasion to have a conversation with Patrick Sheehan, who is the chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee. If you have a chance to go on the AAC website, I think they have an excellent model because they develop a work plan, and every month they deal with that work plan. And what is it that you said to me, Ben, that I said I was going to quote during our meet and greet?
That the committee shouldn't be focused on dealing with issues. They should be focused on getting deliverables.
Right, and I think that's the watchword. That's the watchword. So how do people feel about going ahead with a discussion about the establishment of work groups and maybe even trying to get them set up? And I know you're sort of in a vacuum because you haven't had the orientation, but I think everybody here is astute enough to probably make those initial cuts.
Would it be more efficient to have the committees decide which working groups they need or to have the whole committee? I mean, I wasn't here last year, so I'm not sure. If we had a whole committee decide that, then that would kind of create an hour of debate.
No, and I'm sorry. I've been using work group in an incorrect way. I'm talking about establishing subcommittees to which members of the Writers Advisory Council would be on, with the idea that the committees would have most of the work would be done in committees, and then those committees would bring the results of that work to the full WAC for discussion and debate, much like we're doing on a rush level with the budget. And I, you're right, I'm not giving enough information. Historically, we've had various committees. Usually, when I first joined 8 years ago, they sort of were bus and rail committee, I think a rail committee and a bus committee, which is sort of what the Metro Access still has, I mean, AAC still has one of those. Last year, we established, I think, two committees because there was nothing going on with the budget, so that really didn't meet. A safety and security committee and a customer service and operations committee. And we did that sort of in parallel to the way the WMATA board has committees. Of course, they have many more big committees than that.
Right.
But those were the two basic operational level committees that we had. And the question was, do we want to do that again this year?
So the whole committee has to decide which subcommittees there are, not the actual committee. Is that
using those terms
interchangeably?
Right. The whole council.
Okay.
Should, I think,
that
decide
makes sense,
what
the
committees. I'm sorry, I'm using the wrong terminologies.
Are there standing committees that are just always in operation, or is this just
no? It's very interesting. If you look at the bylaws, all committees go out of existence at the end of the calendar year. So in effect, we have no committees except for the one we just established, which is the budget committee. And the hiring committee is WMATA's. We just appointed members to it. Okay. Is this something you want to think about some more, or Marianne?
I thought that we hadn't gotten into it last month, was sort of the whole point, too many people didn't know background and to know what exactly we want. And we have still...
We're still in that same mode? Okay. John.
Sure.
What portion of the orientation could we possibly do that would give people that, or what would you suggest that we do going forward? I mean, which would also, you know, include adjourning the meeting if we really aren't in a position to go forward with anything meaningful tonight.
I can tell you that my portion of the orientation was going to be really a journey through the Metro website and the resources that you have available to you and sort of the structure of things. I am happy to either do that at another time, or, I mean, we can do it here. It's not something I just want to email out because I think it would be helpful to be a little interactive. With regard, and stop me if I'm not answering your question, because I feel like I'm not, it's not totally congruous. With regard to the formation of committees as part of tonight's discussion, I think my sense is that the council doesn't have a good idea of what the issues are that are out there. I don't think you can decide we're going to have Committee A and it's going to cover this, and Committee B and it's going to cover this, if we don't know, you know, if it then, I feel like we're putting the cart before the horse in terms of, well, if we don't know what the 10 issues that the RAC is going to work on this year, and 9 of them end up in Committee A and only 1 of them ends up in Committee B, then
so what
that's
you,
my concern for doing this tonight.
So are you saying, so what are you proposing for tonight? Yes.
Maybe Ben has a way out of this.
Yes. I think the model that Karen pursued with the Budget Committee is a good one. So I'm going to suggest that, or I'm going to move, make it a little more definitive, that before the next RAC meeting, the leadership team will solicit members for whatever committees the leadership team decides are necessary. And accept nominations, and then we'll vote at the next RAC meeting on the membership of those committees, just as we voted on the membership of the Budget Committee.
I don't think it.
Is there a second to that before we engage in discussion? Okay.
I don't think it should be necessarily left to the lead committee to come up with possible subcommittees. Why can't anybody else propose one as well?
Fine with me. Yeah, it doesn't have to be in a vacuum, for sure.
Candace.
So then, as a part of our task, then, is that, are we soliciting ideas from the rest of the council to see like what issues we think are pressing for this year? And then based on that, is that how we're gonna basically form our committees? Because right now we have a Budget Committee, we know that that's important. We most likely can't have more than maybe one or two other committees. So I think that we have to decide what's most important for 2014 before we can move forward with anything else. So that's just my opinion. I'm going off of what John said, and that makes the most sense. So I think, if anything, we need to solicit from the rest of the council what's important for this upcoming year and then form committees based on that. That's just my opinion.
Right.
And we can do that via email.
Right. My suggestion was that the leadership team coordinate that process, receive suggestions from everybody, come up with the, you know, look at the issues that are out there, form the committees, you know, by issue group, and then, as we did with the Budget Committee, you know, solicit nominations for those committees so we can have a vote at the next RAC meeting.
Okay,
just for the sake of time.
I'm assuming, Frank, that this is on the motion. Go on. I'm sorry.
It might be because of my Myers-Briggs formation or character, but I would prefer that we discuss those issues collectively in person rather than on email, because I think that sometimes at least the way my mind works, I may have one idea, and when I hear someone say something similar, it percolates the idea a little bit differently, and ideas meld and mesh, and sometimes we come up with, I think, better planning that way.
Would it be possible then to, Frank's idea is fine, and I think very workable, if we can maybe circulate the ideas via email from last year that maybe weren't completed. If I remember from the last meeting, there was significant comment on the committees from last year and the, not necessarily lack of work, but the amount of work that was left over. Maybe a start to Frank's idea would be to send those around for people to start gathering, I don't know, points of interest. So that regardless of whether we meet in person or virtually over email, we at least have an idea of what's been previously left unfinished.
Karen?
Right, I just have a really quick comment. Having chaired one of the committees last year, and since we're already in the second month of the year, the committees are going to expire in December, I don't think we should spend so much time with the titles of the committee. I think that if we come up with very generic titles and then group the primary issues in those, you know, specific committees, we would probably be more productive. I think that we can model the committees
after Metro, or we can go as generic as rail, bus, Metro, or something like that. But I think what we need to do is think really high level here, and what is the best way for us to get our work done in the limited time that we have. I think last year we spent way too much time on these kinds of issues. So at this point, I really think that we should try to come up with the committees and then deal with the issues at the committee level.
Red.
So one other thing. I thought it might be helpful for people that weren't here last year if we could just distribute the work product. There was two work products I think we approved last year. One was the, what did we call it? The customer commitment. And the other one was, what was the other one that you did?
The airport.
I think were good examples of like what we're looking, what we're talking about. And that would maybe get everybody's idea, cause their imagination to start working a little bit.
Barbara.
Yeah, go ahead.
I really think I could go either way. Okay. I could go with deciding what our priorities are and then coming up with committees, or I could go with coming up with committees and deciding what our priorities are. My decision would come down on the side of what is the fastest way, which is not always the best way. I also have a I have no problem with circulating what we did last year, but I don't want to deal with last year's work. I think it's very No. I'm not speaking to that. I'm speaking to Tom saying, let's finish the work of last year that maybe wasn't finished, because each year brings a new thing with Metro. Do you know what I mean? In other words, the budget hearings to me are probably the driving force of everything that we do this year. Also, their rollout of their customer care program is the driving force. So I wouldn't spend too much time trying to unfinished work, because I think Ben hit the nail on the head. Perhaps we spent too much time with issues and not deliverables. And as I said, if you look on the I will send you the link to the AAC website where they basically have a work plan and they rigorously, it's deliverables oriented, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean that we should go back to last year's work and finish what was left undone. I mean, what was left undone for a reason. So I just meant as a kind of launch point for this year. And your two examples there were perfectly fine, that it might be useful just as a launch point.
Okay.
So I'm going to call the question on my motion.
Okay. Can you restate your motion, please?
The motion is that the leadership team will solicit deliverables/ideas from the rest of the RAC for the coming year. Group those ideas/deliverables into committees, solicit nominations for those committees from the rest of the RAC for a final vote on the membership of those committees at the next RAC meeting.
And that was seconded. So are everybody ready to vote? I'm not going to call the question if everybody's ready. Oh, I'm sorry, Lorraine. Something about my eyesight is bad on the contrast.
I'm thinking more like Karen, that the more we keep rehashing, we're wasting more time.
Point, point of order, to call the question means that the debate is going to be closed, and that's what we're voting on now.
No, the reason I'm doing this is because I missed Lorraine. She had her template up before you call the questions, and
well,
I should have called
calling the question. The point of calling the question is to end debate whether people are ready for it or not. That's why we vote on closing debate.
I understand parliamentary procedure, but I'm going to call on Lorraine because I felt like I didn't give her a chance to speak, and she had her template up for some time. For some reason, I'm having a hard time seeing the contrast. Go on, Lorraine, please.
I just don't want to make, like, a list of the wish lists, which is more or less what happened last year, that we made this huge wish list, and it was quite large, and then we didn't have the time to do it or complete anything. I think that we should just go ahead and have work groups established. We can do it via email or whatever, however I don't know, the other last year's what was safety and security and customer service and communications or something like that, or operations or whatever was the name. I think that if we keep, what I see is the potential of doing the same thing that we did last year. And I think that I don't want to do that again.
Okay. Are we ready to close debate? I'm sorry for the error. Are we ready to close debate? All in favor of closing debate, which has to be two-thirds. Yeah, that's two-thirds. Okay, I call the question. All in favor of the main motion, which is did it again? I'm sorry. Okay, which is Ben's motion. All in favor, please signify by saying, raise your hands. Did you get
Rob, Ben, Fred, do you have your hand up tonight? Fred. So there's seven.
I'm opposed.
Sorry. Opposed, I have Frank, Lorraine, Marianne, Daniel, Barbara, Carol.
Yes.
So that's six. And Candace would be seven.
No, I'm sorry. I thought we moved on.
No, that was opposed. Okay. So I have six opposed.
Okay.
Abstentions?
How do we count abstentions?
They're abstentions. They don't count.
That's what I thought. So, okay, so the motion carries. So the motion carries. Okay. So we'll move ahead. Can you write out, did you capture what is motion?
Recorded.
Okay. Okay. So we will.
That's why I read it, so I can go back and listen.
Okay. So we will move ahead with that. Okay.
I just wanted to make, so I'm a new member, and I just voted for the motion. But, you know, we're an advisory council, and so we're supposed to be, I think, working to some degree in partnership with WMATA, the metro system. And, you know, this is only my second meeting, so I don't know a lot. I'm trying to learn as much as I can. But I just find it very difficult to kind of understand these issues because we haven't had the orientation. I don't have the experience of having been on the board before. And I just feel a little bit rudderless, you know, between last meeting and this meeting. And I think to understand how the RAC could be effective, we have to understand what the priorities of WMATA are. We don't have to necessarily agree with those priorities, but I think we have to understand what's the mindset of WMATA so that we can figure out how can we best focus our energy and time. So I just wanted to make that comment.
And thank you for your candor. Well, then what I'd like to do before we adjourn is, what is it that would make members feel more comfortable and less rudderless? What do you need to move forward? Okay, what do we need to provide you for you to move forward?
Well, I know we were targeting this orientation program. So,
okay.
I mean, from a strategic level, I'd like to understand more of the strategic planning going on within WMATA, what their major initiatives are, and that personally would help me.
Okay.
I think especially when we're talking about formation of committees, having a better understanding of what the committee work products will be in terms of deliverables, the way that Ben was talking about, and then exactly how those deliverables are going to be used moving forth. I feel like it's just kind of out of context for me right now. I don't know how those things are going to be used and what we're going to be working on.
Okay.
Right.
I'd just like to say that I think the more that we can just focus on one or two or three deliverables, I think is better. So from my point of view, having somebody speak just for 5 minutes about the people that have been here at the RAC for a while and some things that they think that we should work on, you know, again, two or three things that would be helpful in terms of just priorities.
Barbara, this really isn't answering your question about what are the things people need, but that was what I was trying to say in the debate, is that there was a lot of I sensed a lot of people were looking for a shorter list this year than last year. Like I heard people say two or three, as opposed to each of, well, I know the one committee, we had a list of, we chose maybe 7 or 10 out of a list of 20-some candidates and then ended up doing, I don't think, any of them, and unless the somehow the pledge got into that. But the private audience I had with the board in December, they did say there were two things particularly they were looking for. One was response on the fair and budget, which is what we talked about. The other was something coming in the spring. It has to do with Title VI, and there are probably better people to explain what's going to be happening than me, but there's going to be some kind of a proposal in the spring or some plan how to achieve the Title VI objectives so that it'd be presented in the fall or something to the board. So they're really looking for the RAC to participate in that. I just can't describe that very well. And but they also said they wanted us to come up with our list of work plan. I mean, they said those were two things that they cared about, but they looked to us to decide, as the AAC has done, is come up with our own few things or however many things that we want to address, and they trust that we will do, you know, something that matters to us.
Karen.
Okay, this is going to be really quickly, but I've been pushing very hard for orientation for the new RAC members. I think it's very important that we have orientation when you come through the door. It's just, last year for me, it was just invaluable. But I also think that Metro should take advantage of providing orientation through webinars or other means. I don't think you, I don't know if it's necessary for us to physically come here for the orientations. And as the leadership team, we should also consider developing accomplishments reports at the end of the year so this information is available for the people that come on board the next year. And also, what are the priorities of Metro for the year and what were their accomplishments for the year as well? Those types of documents would just be invaluable for the members.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment, raise questions or issues? Dexter.
I guess this is more of a question for John. Is the orientation self-explanatory, where it can be just emailed?
I'm going to figure out how to repackage it.
Okay.
So that it will, yes. What I was going to hand out tonight is a little too bare bones to be self-explanatory. So my schedule is freed up tomorrow, though.
Right, right. But here's what I'd like to say. I think what we need to do is to have the orientation. Do you have the names of the 8 members who volunteered to be on the orientation?
Yeah.
Okay. I think the most important thing for us to do to address your issue is to have an orientation, and not just an orientation that John provides. He has a, you know, I think it needs to be what we all collectively decide will be of value, and I think that orientation has to somehow happen at the next, between now and the next meeting. And I don't know how that's going to happen, but I think that's what's needed, because what I'm hearing, and thank you so much for your came. I was wondering, with your background, why you were sort of laying back. So I'm glad that you spoke up. But I think that's what we need to do, because I can understand there's a lot of information we're sitting on that we know, that we assume everybody else knows or whatever, and you don't know it. So I think the most important thing is for the 8 people who expressed an interest in the orientation to get together as quickly as possible with John, figure out what we need, and provide the orientation. Mary Ann, you look puzzled.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure who the, don't remember who the 8 people are, but I would think later. I thought there would be something planned, which it sounds like it is more around what John was going to present around how to use documents. And what I'm hearing, it has, that's a piece, but right. It has nothing to do with setting up committees. And so I think, I guess I'd suggest somebody from the leadership team, if they are not part of the eight, take the lead in making sure that this happens.
I'm going to take the lead in making sure it happens, because I think it's vital to this. I mean, we can't get started until we can know what we're doing. And I think that's what I'm hearing is we don't have enough information to really be effective in developing a work plan, establishing groups, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it is because because for the most part there are new people who are brand new. I mean, there's been a tremendous turnover. So how do people feel about the possibility of trying to do an orientation between now and the next meeting? It would mean coming to a separate meeting.
A separate meeting? Okay.
For all members or just new members?
I think it should be all members, because I think that was one of the problems with the last one as far as I was concerned. We haven't had it's not been an orientation every year. You know, there's been an orientation of sorts maybe two or three, no more than three times since I've been a member of the REC. And in times it's been only new members, and I think that's really a disservice, and it's been mostly staff driven, and I think this needs to be something where we collaborate in our own education, so to speak. I mean, Ben.
I think, A, we should probably get out of here,
yeah.
But
yeah.
B, we should channel this when we get to the bylaw review later in the year,
yes.
Because the calendar of how the bylaws are set up and how people are appointed to the RAC is actually responsible for this problem for the most part, because people come in on a certain time of year, the leadership team changes at a certain time of year, and it all happens at the same time. So when we talk about that later in the year, please remember this conversation.
Okay. So I think that does that sound like what we should really be doing is focusing on giving people the tools in order to be able to do our job, which is, to develop a work plan that's deliverables focused. That's what I'm hearing. And I have every confidence that the budget committee can use them as a model of this kind of behavior, because they're backed into a deadline which is going to force them to do this. But it really should be a good model for everybody else. So are we? Is there any urgent business? Nothing more urgent than snow.
Yeah.
Light snow occurring.
Okay.
My intelligence is, quote, getting heavy on 8th Street Northeast quickly, according to the Twitters. What I would like to say as your staff person is that before the end of this week, I will come up with a couple dates for both date possibilities for both the budget committee and whatever kind of orientation thing is going to happen between now and March 5th, if that's acceptable to the chair. All I would ask for is a quick response so we can at least get this on the calendar and then move forward from there.
Okay. I think I understood what you're saying, but I'll talk to you. Okay. We're adjourned.